Hello, and welcome to Korean Context. My name is Jenna Gibson, Associate Director for Communication Technology and Programs here at KEI, and I will be your host today. In this episode, I sit down with Troy Stangerone, KEI's Senior Director for Congressional Affairs and Trade, to talk about potential scenarios for reunification of the Korean Peninsula based on the German case. Troy and I discuss many of the political, social, and economic issues that Korea will have to face, and look at some of the ways that the German example can provide useful lessons for the future. We also discuss some of the things that South Korea can do now to prepare, as well as some of the things that they just cannot predict. Thanks for joining us today, Troy.
Thanks for having me.
So 2015 has been a year of anniversaries. In August, we remembered the end of World War II, and in October, it's 25 years since the official unification of East and West Germany. For South Korea, the German example is an important one, as it shows the successful unification of two countries divided by war. Korean President Park Geun-hye herself has drawn parallels between the two countries. In a speech in Dresden in 2014, she said, quote, "Just as the German people secured freedom, prosperity, and peace by tearing down the Berlin Wall, we too must tear down barriers in our march towards a new future on the Korean Peninsula." And she continued, "These are the images of one Germany that encourage those of us in Korea to cement our hope and our conviction that unification must also come to the Korean Peninsula." So after hearing these things and seeing this example, Troy, from your perspective, is Germany a fair comparison to the Korean case?
Well, I think when we look at the case of German unification, it's the one that stands out. It's rooted in the divisions of the Cold War itself, much as the Korean Peninsula. It's also the case that's most well known. It's also the case that's perhaps the most modern. And so when we look at it from that perspective, we can see a lot of reasons why anyone on the Korean Peninsula might be drawn to the situation. It's an example of what they hope to aspire to, and it's also an example for perhaps the lessons they should be thinking about going forward. But the question is it a fair comparison? Is it an interesting one? Because when we think about this, if you look at this from a statistical perspective, any single data point is not statistically significant. So I think while there's much we can learn from the German example, we also need to keep in mind that it provides insights into what we should be thinking about, the types of issues that might arise as unification occurs on the Korean Peninsula, but also understand that there are many differences and that those differences will mean that how things play out on the Korean Peninsula will play out potentially in some situations much differently than they did in Germany.
Right. So as you mentioned, there are some things that perhaps Korea can learn from the German example. Are there things that Germany got right in its unification process? And are there things that are maybe mistakes Korea can learn from in preparing for unification?
Well, there's one issue that I think people have discussed a lot, and that is the economic question. When unification occurred, Helmut Kohl made the decision to take and exchange the East German mark and the West German mark at a 1-to-1 rate. There's a couple instances where it was 2-to-1, but essentially at 1-to-1. And many economists viewed this as a mistake, something that crippled the economic recovery in the East. You know, if we look now, the East still trails, other than a couple of cities, you know, the West in terms of economic performance. So this is the question that's sort of been discussed. How does Korea take and do a better job of taking and managing the economic transition? But there's another side to this coin, which is that the decision on the Deutschmark was not simply one of economics. It was also a political question. And one might ask, you know, and I've heard this phrase before, how could East Germans be asked to be second-class citizens of their own country? So the question of what was a mistake and what wasn't a mistake is maybe a little bit more complicated than we actually think of. And so from a purely economic perspective, Korea should take a different path towards unification. And we've seen this in the idea behind even like the Sunshine Policy, to where you have this sort of gradual economic buildup in the North and a gradual economic integration. So the way over time, when the two countries reach political unification, that you don't have the same economic burden that the West German or the unified German government faced. But we won't necessarily always have the choice of something quite that smooth necessarily. And so you have to balance what may be, from a purely textbook example, the incorrect economic decision with what is the proper political decision, because you have to bring the two peoples together.
Obviously, there are a lot of logistics that would have to be dealt with throughout unification. You've mentioned some of them here. But even if the technical aspects go perfectly, there's a good chance that social integration will not happen overnight. And as you mentioned, there's going to be a lot of issues with that. So I know, for example, that defectors living in South Korea now often have a hard time assimilating and report feeling isolated from society. So are there any things that can be done now to smooth that transition in the future?
Yeah, you know, in some ways, for as much as we've discussed the economic challenges, the real difficulties of unification will most likely be on the social political level. And if we look at the German case, there's been recent polling data to come out saying that, in essence, you still have a situation to where one third of East Germans see the Westerners as arrogant, and that many in the West still see the East Germans as being needy. And you see political divisions in terms of what the role of the state should be, what the role of women is in society. Ironically, perhaps, in the East, they have a more progressive view of the role of women than they do in the West. So you're going to see these divisions sort of stay in place. And the question becomes, how can one take and sort of overcome these divisions? And, you know, this may be one of the areas where the real lesson from Germany is that you need to address the societal challenges early on. And you also need to understand that you're going to have a question of the difference between unification and integration. Unification will essentially happen in a day when the two political systems come together, but integration will take generations. And thinking about this from the long-term perspective, how do you take and encourage South Koreans to be more understanding of the challenges that North Koreans are going to face? While at the same time, also being more cognizant of trying to listen and integrate into the concerns that North Koreans express. And the reality is that this will take decades, and that when any North Korean enters the new unified Korean society, they're going to be looking at a world that is essentially almost antithetical to the world they grew up in. And we discuss often that information gets into the North, you know, be it even seeing South Korean movies and other things. And to an extent, that will be helpful. But the challenge is going to be is that those who grew up in the North didn't grow up in a democracy. They didn't grow up in a market economy. There are going to be basic social norms that the South has that will be foreign to those living in the North. And even when you look at it, parts of the language have started to diverge. So it'll be readily evident who is a Northerner and who is a Southerner. And so if you have general perspectives of each region, you know, when the people interact, it'll be known, oh, they're a Southerner, or, oh, they're a Northerner. And so just trying to work through these challenges is going to be the real issue going forward, because if the two peoples can't come together, the cost of unification will become irrelevant.
So far, what we've talked about, all of that kind of assumes that North Korea collapses in a similar way to East Germany. Relatively quick and relatively stable process. But especially given the security concerns about the collapse of a nuclear state, what do the options look like if the collapse process is not so smooth?
Well, this is the challenge, is that none of us know how unification is going to come about. And when you look at Germany, you're right. You know, it was a relatively stable process. It took place over actually a little bit more than a year, but we may not have that opportunity with North Korea. And if the process is not something to where there is the ability to have a negotiated settlement, there's a couple of things that come into play. One is that unification will take place both internally and externally. And the benefit of the German process was that you had an opportunity for the two Germanys and then the four powers from World War II, the Soviet Union, the United States, the United Kingdom, and France, to sit together and negotiate a treaty, essentially settling all of their disputes. They gave a final settlement to what the German border with Poland would be. They negotiated what the status of Soviet troops would be, when they would leave East Germany, and took care of all of these questions, whether Germany would be neutral or stay within NATO. And so the disadvantage of a quick process would be is that all of the neighboring countries who would have an interest in what the future of a Korean Peninsula would look like would not have an opportunity to take and sort of work out their differences and find a solution they can all agree to. So one challenge will be on the external side, finding a way to bring all the different parties into the process and to avoid a situation where, you know, we often talk about whether China, for its own purposes, would take and try and seal the border and perhaps come into North Korea and create a permanent situation there on the ground. So without the opportunity to talk in advance, you have these issues on the external side that will come to play. But the other challenge is that in a negotiated process, you mentioned the nuclear issue. There's a very process-oriented way to handle the transition to the nuclear weapons, send in inspectors, do the dismantling process. If collapse happens quickly, you'll have to go in, find the weapons, secure them, and then find a way to dispose of them in what might be a very hectic and chaotic climate. And so when you look at that, you have this issue of how do you secure the nukes. But one other issue, which I think other people may not talk about a lot, is from a human rights perspective, we have, it's estimated between 80,000 to 120,000 political prisoners in prison camps in North Korea. If you have a negotiated process, there's a means to take, monitor the prisoners, make sure that they're taken care of, make sure that nothing happens to them. If you have a rapid collapse, or if conflict were to break out, one of the priorities you'll need to take and consider is how you protect those prisoners. Ensure that North Korean guards or others who may feel that in, you know, whatever the new order is, that these people might be evidence of crimes against them, don't engage in activities to try and eliminate either people in the camps or other evidence. And so you'll have these internal issues to where you might not have had a challenge dealing with it in a negotiated process, but if the process happens quickly, you'll need to react in a rather expeditious manner to protect political prisoners, find the nuclear weapons, and find a way to engage external powers in terms of how to have a stable situation after unification occurs.
Another question that you've raised in the past is whether North Koreans themselves get a voice in unification. Should they be able to vote to unify, for example? Should an independent North Korea under a new political system be on the table? What are your thoughts on this dilemma?
Well, this is one of the interesting things. When German unification came about, it happened in a situation where East Germany was in significant need of a financial infusion. And the Soviet Union, as it was trying to retrench in Eastern Europe, had essentially told the leadership in East Germany that they would have to look to West Germany. West Germany's price for providing financial assistance to the East was that they have free, fair, and open elections. As a result of this, most people in East Germany voted for parties who campaigned on a political platform of unification with the West. In hindsight, one of the issues that has come from this process, though, is that, and this is one of the issues in terms of differences between the East and the West, is that while East Germans voted for unification, they didn't vote for a specific type of unification. And so there's this sense that they didn't really get a say in what their future would look like and what the terms of that would be. And so when you think about this in terms of the context of the Korean Peninsula, there are a couple questions that come to mind. One is, after the process happens, should there be a vote? And this sort of goes both ways, too, because if North Koreans should have a say in what their future looks like, the other side of this coin is, should South Koreans have a say as well? We know that, you know, there's been a lot of concerns in the South about the burden of unification, whether South Koreans would want to go forward. And so there's this question of whether both sides should get a say. And if they do, you know, should what's on the table not be a question of simply voting for political parties or something of that nature, but do you have a situation to where the ballot says something to the effect of, do you vote for a confederation where perhaps there's some division and you have two nominally independent states? Do you vote for unification or do you vote for independence? And so, you know, these are the kinds of things that we should be thinking about, because if you're going to avoid some of the political challenges that East Germany has faced, one way to do that is perhaps giving North Koreans more of a buy-in up front in terms of what the future of the Korean Peninsula would look like, or at least the future of a unified Korea would look like. But at the same time, if you're going to do that, it does seem as though it's only fair to ask South Koreans that as well. One of the challenges for this will be, and this becomes even more difficult if you have a situation where collapse happens or conflict happens, is you're going to need time to take and go through and develop a voter roll and peel through everything, make sure you have a proper list, so that way you can have a good, clear, fair election. And that's one of the challenges, is that in terms of the record keeping and everything, while none of us necessarily know what North Korean records look like per se, my instinct is going to be that they're probably less well kept than the East German ones were.
Right. And as you mentioned earlier, North Koreans don't necessarily know how to vote or how to go about a process within a democratic society.
And this is one of the other challenges that you're going to face, which is that if you look at the situation between East and West Germany, there was significantly more interaction between the two people. So there was a better understanding of what West Germany looked like. There were more people-to-people connections. You had travel between the two countries. Much of East Germany received and watched West German TV signals. You were allowed to take and send mail. You could call people. So these are all the kinds of things that don't happen today on the Korean Peninsula. President Park has really been pushing the North to take and try and do the family reunions. And this is sort of one of the small areas where you get some interaction. You asked earlier on, you know, how do you deal with some of the social issues? Well, the families who've been divided on the Korean Peninsula, these people are going to likely be the foundation of what the new society looks like. Those familial ties, which will help bond the two societies together. And so the longer they're kept apart, the more difficult it is for them to have interactions, the weaker those family ties will be. And so in the long run, one of the most important things, and I think this is one of the things that, you know, President Park has gotten right, is that while the nuclear issue is important, and we all see that in the papers, rebuilding these family ties, these people-to-people ties, is going to be one of the keys to making a successful unification in the future.
So another big sticking point is what to do with the remaining members of the ruling Communist Party of North Korea. Should they be integrated or banned from political life in the hypothetical new unified Korea? Does the German example provide any guidance on this?
This will somewhat be contingent on how unification happens. If North Korea decides to negotiate out of a process, many of these questions will probably be settled in the negotiation. If unification happens from collapse or conflict, the situation will look much different. But when we look at East Germany, you had a situation where the last prime minister, Hans Modrow, before the first freely elected government, he served in the German parliament after unification. He served in the European parliament. You had the former Communist Party in East Germany, which reformed itself. It's now the Party of the Left, which is the third largest party in the German parliament. It's a fairly strong political force in East Germany. And you've seen in some of the other communist countries, the Soviet Union, for example, where the Communist Party basically did a similar thing to where it sort of changed its platform and name and everything. And, you know, this is going to be the challenge. What do you do with the Korean Workers' Party? And I think when you look more at the bureaucratic transition on the German side, it'll be a little easier and it'll provide some guidelines to what is possible. If you look through, you have a situation where essentially there were a series of classifications which were done to determine whether people could remain in jobs if they're in the bureaucracy. So, for example, if you had been accused of a human rights violation, you couldn't remain in a position. If you had cooperated with the Stasi, you couldn't remain. All the Stasi, of course, were banned from political life going forward. You had a situation where essentially the entire foreign service was laid off. On the military side, while they integrated some of the people in, most of them were people who had technical skills rather than many of the officer corps. And anyone essentially on the high level officer corps was, you know, retired out of the service. But when you look at this, there are also practical issues that will come into play. So, for example, the West German or the unified German government kept all of the teachers in East Germany. They reformed the schools, reformed the curriculum, but kept them in place. So there will be some areas where it's, in some ways, it's a manpower issue, finding however X number of teachers you need, it was going to be a very difficult challenge. But there are certain areas to where if you were involved in crimes against the population, where if you were involved with the secret police, if you were of a certain high level in either your ministry or government. So, for example, it would be hard to imagine any circumstances under which Kim Jong-un would be able to remain in some type of government position after unification, even if it was a peaceful negotiation process. There will be certain people who will be moved out of the system. Ultimately, South Korea and North Korea will have to sort of figure out where those lines are drawn, but you'll need, for practical purposes, some people to remain in the system to keep the trains running, as they say. And it's not going to be an easy choice because there will be a lot of perspectives of how the regime had behaved and whether anyone has a right to stay. But you also face the practical situation that if you're going to rebuild the country, if you're going to get the economy running, you're going to need manpower. But at the same time, one way you can supplement some of this is by building as good a cohort of bureaucratic officials in the South as possible beforehand. And thinking about things like developing incentive programs to bring talented people from the private sector after unification into government positions to help supplement the needs you're going to have.
One thing that you mentioned was the human rights concern, which is obviously a big issue when it comes to North Korea now. How about transitional justice in unification? Is there an opportunity for those who have been accused of human rights violations or crimes against humanity to face justice for what they've done?
You know, even if we look beyond the German situation, this has been handled differently. You had truth commissions in South Africa. In Chile, well, the government there essentially set the terms of their own transitional justice. You also see a situation to where Pinochet essentially gave himself a pardon, but over time, his society developed a real sense of identity and self-assuredness. Then there was a sense of bringing him to justice. I think the most important thing going forward is to try and document what happened. There needs to be a record and a memory, and you need for both societies to essentially agree on what happened. So it needs to be an open process, because if you have divisions between what history was, it'll create long-term problems in the future, and you'll have this continued societal division. Whether it's right away, whether it's later in time, there will be a sense that there needs to be some type of justice. That will be for future leaders to decide. But this is going to be a process. It's something that I think all sides will work to, and it's something that will be important for healing society as a whole as well.
All right. So we've touched on a lot of issues or potential issues in reunification. Is there anything else that you think will be important to think about?
Yeah, I think when we look forward, there's a lot of issues we can identify. How do you handle things like immigration in terms of how quickly or right away whether North Koreans should be able to emigrate to the South? How do you handle the political situation? How do you handle the external situation? But one of the things that I think is the challenge of unification is that because we don't know when unification will occur, preparation is very difficult. And I'll give an example of this. The North Korean energy infrastructure will essentially need to be rebuilt. It's something that we all know. But the challenge with rebuilding it isn't a question then of how do you do it? It's a question of when you do it. And what I mean by that is, you know, if we think back over the last few years, you've had the shale gas revolution in the United States. Prices of gas have dropped dramatically. We've seen prices of oil drop as well recently. Many of these issues will be things that will be trapped in the time in which it occurs, meaning that what you might have recommended for how you rebuild the energy infrastructure in North Korea in the future 5 years ago might be different from what it will be 10 years ago. So when we think about this, and this is what I think is good about the German example, it helps to show us where the challenges are going to be, what the issues that arise might be. Some of them will be different. Some of them will manifest themselves in different ways. But we know that there's certain things we're going to have to do. You're going to have to integrate the population. You're going to have to deal with the political situations. But the circumstances in which they happen won't be clear. And so just like if we were to rebuild the energy infrastructure today, if you look at market prices, if you look in terms of the time it takes to build different types of plants, the new energy infrastructure in North Korea would probably have a lot of LNG. 10, 15 years from now, maybe solar has progressed. Maybe we have other breakthroughs we haven't even thought of. But you won't be able to develop a plan and say, we're going to use LNG or we're going to use merely solar or something. So it's going to require creativity and flexibility on the South Korean side of essentially coming up with the issue areas that they think are most important, but constantly updating them for how both the global economy has changed, technology has changed, and the global political situation has changed.
All right, great. We've touched on a lot of great issues, and it will be interesting to see how things play out. Thank you for joining us today, Troy.
Thanks for having me.
That's all for this episode of Korean Context. Thank you for listening, and we hope you will join us again next time.